Good afternoon and welcome. And just stress to you, as I've stressed to earlier submitters, we've read the submissions, so you don't need to reread those to us or even paraphrase from them. We've read them. But if you wish to make any additional points to us verbally, then you're welcome to.
Yeah, well, thanks for the opportunity to speak. I'll go through. I sent in some extra supporting data for submission, and some of the photos are probably a little bit hard to probably follow without speaking to them, pointing out a few things around them. So I'll just head off through the submission. Oh, this is supporting data. That's pretty self-explanatory, really. It's just an index. Our farming operation, we farm three sheep and beef farms. We're about 70% sheep, 30% beef. Probably one of the issues I have around the whole farming structure here is the fact that while we have quite intensive beef finishing, the cows and calves are quite extensive, and I'll come to some of the effects that I think are quite different in those areas where we actually run the stock, about how everything's getting lumped into one. So the middle farm there is only 524 hectare and actually won't be affected by the winter grazing rule because we are not doing over 50 hectares of crop on that, but the other two, 866 and the 1530 plus the lease block of 160 are definitely affected by that, so consents would be needed under your proposed plan. I've been farming for over 30 years and I'm married to Janine. I'm a member of the Upper Aparima catchment group, and I was also a member of the liaison group for a number of years before that in the Aparima. I was also involved 10 years ago with a large nitrogen trial in New Zealand and its effects on waterways. We did a lot of work around that. I was one of three South Island farmers involved in that, and I drank her on the Alliance Meat Company. Right, so the rules I want to focus on are stock exclusion rule 70, cultivation slope and ground rule 25, and intensive winter grazing rule 23. Land plan part A, economic impact. I'm sort of going to cover that going through the other rules as I go. As I said, we predominantly finish our beef in separate finishing areas. So these waterways were predominantly got fenced off already. We're already seeing a lot of weed increase in these areas and bank erosion, which you'll probably see in some of the photos further over. While I think this probably is the best scenario for this intensive cattle area, I'm not convinced where we're only predominantly sheep and cows once a year in the more extensive part of the farm. I don't think that could be actually detrimental to what we're trying to achieve here, and there might be better ways of improving water quality there. I support Rule 2042A recommendation that the sheep not be included, but I also believe low-level cattle grazing should be allowed. Now, the problem I'm going to have around that is if we're going to keep all cattle out, and I assume that's going to be calves as well as cows, then we're really going to have to put up at least a 3 or 4 wire fence to keep calves out. So technically, we're going to end up keeping sheep out by default, which with what we've seen coming on some of these photos here, this is an area, when I bought this property 6 years ago, this area was already fenced off and tree planted, and I thought it was a great idea. It hadn't been done for that long at that stage, but you can see some of the erosion that's happening around the banks. If I can get this clicker to work on the front bit. Whoops, what have I done? Oh, the middle. And here, it's a bit hard to see in this photo because it's come a bit dark on here, but all this bank all the way along here is getting pulled out with the long grass, and that was in a flood. Oh, it was only a small flood. About a month ago we had in the Acton. Most of the way the flood didn't go over the banks of the river. And this is actually up the Dilston stream, which flows into the Acton, but you can see how it's dropping the trees out and how it's hoeing in under the banks. And there's some places, there's another photo I actually had, I didn't put in here because it didn't come out that good, where it's dropping, it's gone quite a few metres back in and dropping the fence into the creek. If we proceed to the next lot of photos, this is directly above that. That's probably about 800 metres fenced out, and you'll see the banks here have just been lightly grazed, and how much clearer the how much better the banks are. You only see one example there, which one? Just in there, of a little bit of bank erosion. This corner here is by far a lot sharper than any of the corners you would have seen further down in the creek, and it's still only having a small effect on the creek. I'm just trying to see if you can see one of them. Probably this photo here, you'll notice that we haven't cultivated this paddock out here, is reasonably young grass. You can just see a wee bit of out in the far left hand corner here is the young grass, and where we've been through a crop we've replaced. The stock don't graze this older grass as near as hard as what they'd will. The nice grasses are further back, so they're not actually spending much time more grazing this area hard. It's only in the winter grazing when we've got to fence off if we were break feeding the paddock off to sheep, which it would be at that time of year because this ground's too heavy to put cattle on in the winter. Right, fencing off, some of the problems I have around the rules isn't so much the rules, or I'd prefer them to be guidelines, as the actual fact that how they're going to be interpreted. Here on the left, it's a wee bit hard to actually see, but up in here is very steep and it's a struggle to walk up, and it's for quite some distance up here, and you can see bush around the here. Down on the right hand side, it's quite flat, so technically this is only a 2 or 3 degree slope, and this side would be 25-30 easily up there, probably more. This is just below from where that shot is taken, so that's the bottom of the bush, so you can see it flattens out. So how are we going to get on? We're going to have parts of paddocks we're supposed to fence and not other paddocks. So interpretation to me needs to be clarified in these guidelines or rules. This is another example at home, which may come out as clear as it could. That's a lot of scrub in that around the far side, but very flat out here on the right. You can get an idea, that's the bank just in behind there and there. That's how steep some of that is out of there in the vegetation. So stop, don't go down there anyway. You've got to push through the scrub to get that photo.
And Mr. Drummond, I'm just going to interject here. What you have now is the PowerPoint presentation that you've already submitted to us. We've already read that.
Yeah.
So you really don't need to read that out again.
I wasn't going to. That's why I just paused for a moment.
It's really helpful, though, the photos, which... Yeah. If you could talk the photos, obviously we couldn't read into the photos what you wanted us to get from them reading it beforehand.
I appreciate that, and I'm just going to go on to the bluffs at the bottom. Depending on how it's interpreted, if I shoot over to this photo, there's a steep bluff here which got a lot of loose rock coming down, and it's a major access way for stock on our property. So if we're going to try and fence back 5 metres from this waterway, we're not going to be able to take stock past there, and we're going to have to do major bulldozing into the side of the hill with digger work, which would actually cause a lot more damage in my form with runoff into the stream directly below coming across the track that we'd have to put in. So I just think it needs to be thought, and to me that's where the land plan comes in, where it's got to be sensible for the application of the land. Coming back to the other one, going back to this fencing off areas, and I think some of the other ones discussed, so I won't spend too much time on this, is the fact that the cost involved in this. We have the main property at home has got a major creek that runs for 5 kilometres to the back of it, and the one at Five Rivers is more like 7 kilometres to the back. So these are huge costs, easily 100,000 to 400,000, depending on interpretations that you've come up with, around 16 degrees for us. And it could be up to $1 million depending on the water scheme costs. Getting water scheme into these areas is not easy. A lot of our Five Rivers area, we have paddocks that are 20 hectares, would need more than one trough, so you're at least $3,000 or $4,000 a paddock just for a water scheme and getting it pumped into these locations. We've already done the more intensive parts of the farms of water schemes now. You'll see a benefit if I shoot over here, cost of building dams for catching sediment and that. We can build a small dam for $500 to $800, and I think we could use these effectively. The only downside I see to these is, while we all like ducks and I'm a keen duck hunter, I believe that ducks and geese are inclined to bring more E. coli than sheep, so we've got to be careful we're not trying to fix something and create another problem that I think we're great for silt and catchment and phosphate. Going on to this photo here, this is a paddock on our home property. It's up on a hill. You can see there's one, that's about where the fence line goes, where that black line is around. It's not perfectly accurate, but it's pretty close. There's two major gullies up and another one on the right, and there's also another one down there on the left-hand side there. Now, a lot of the water on this hill actually comes straight down the hill. The one on the right, the narrow one's got a little bit of side slope into the gullies, but this one is going to have the same rolling around 20 metres away from the gullies. This one here, which has got a lot bigger slope coming down to the gully next to it, a lot of the gully at the bottom has actually got a small flat area before the gully, so it won't be affected. And there's a lot more water going down that one to the left than there is the ones on the right. And we're going to, that's 9 hectares, that paddock. We're going to lose, as you'll see in the submission, about a third of that paddock to cropping. So that's about 7,500, that paddock alone values a crop, because it normally grows about a 10-tonne crop. So what I'm concerned about is that we end up, if we can't crop some of those areas where that's, to me, that's sensible to crop closer to the stream where there's not a lot of water going into it, where most of the water's going straight down the hill, we're going to have to intensify somewhere else, and it probably means more fodder beat in the flat, which could have worse environmental effects. So that's where I think a land plan's a good idea, where we can actually work out what's the best overall solution to the operation. So that was just the figures around that, which I'll take as read. Now moving on to this one here, this area in here is over 20 degrees. It's only a small area of the paddock. So you're coming down from going up the other side of the tractor and going down here and then along the bottom. That photo there hasn't come out very good, so this is further down. Now, if we can't cultivate this small area up in here that's over the recommended limit, effectively we're going to end up coming in here and trying to turn around the tractor and disc inherit and shifting a lot more soil down the hill than what we will cultivating this little area up here. You can see when this was developed that the scrub and that was pushed down, pretty that one hasn't come out very good here today, but you can see there's quite a buffer from the creek that's down in here, and that's actually is a very good filter to stop nutrients and that getting down into the waterway.
And copies of the photos that we have that you've sent in already, they're much clearer.
Yeah, I'm not sure why that's happened. Very quickly, that's a pile of soil there that's actually cleaned out of this dam, so that's actually been quite effective at catching silt. There was two ducks on it the other day when I took that photo. The sloping ground one, to me, the jump in when you go from 5 metres up to 20 metres with the change is just way too dramatic. And I think maybe Paul's suggestion around that's better, but I think, again, it comes back to me that you're better with a farm plan on that, because different creeks have different amount of water going into them. Just because they're on a sloping ground doesn't mean to say they've got a huge lot of water going into them. It can be going in a different direction to what that slope is. So I think that's where, if you're going to have a guideline or a rule, you need to be able to have a farm management plan that can have the best outcome for everybody in that situation. That's probably just the maps at the end. I won't go too much into them. That was the main creeks up our Five Rivers property running right up the middle, and then some side creeks. We have a number of side creeks that are, the odd spot would be a metre, so it comes down to that interpretation too. We're going to have one or two places that are over a metre, or how we're going to actually define these streams. So to me, a lot of it is around that definition going forward.
Yeah.
I think that covers off. Okay, potentially these rules have a big economic impact for us, not only in lost income, but in potentially in lost stock units and farm value for our properties. While I believe there's still many things I can do better to improve water quality, if we've got a lack of profitability, these are very difficult to do. And some of these blocks that Michael Beattie had a photo up there before, we've got blocks not dissimilar to that. And even a culvert at the bottom where the more of the stock go through, if you're mustering a block, might make more sense than trying to feed off a waterway, because often they just a gradual build up of water and there's not one main source where it starts from. Sometimes you will have that opportunity, but it's, to me there's lots of different ways that we can actually improve the water quality, and sitting down working with somebody sensibly needs a lot better solution than blanket rules. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let's see if we have questions for you.
My question would be that it would be interesting to know, especially because of the size of your catchment group and you're a part of that in many respects, is some real data numbers to actually back up the statements you're making. That would actually be helpful to understand how your approach is actually playing out in real life. And I say that because if you look at the 42A report and submissions, there's a very wide range of views, and some sit with you and some sit on the opposite. So we need to understand both of those before we can make any decisions. So in the, both, it's more of an encouragement comment, Mr. Chairman, to understand what is actually happening. On the face of it, it looks really good. It's just to get those numbers that actually back up your decisions.
Yeah, and I'm fully supportive of this. You know, to me, if we're going to go to a farm plan, then I'm more than happy to do water monitoring and actually out our boundaries. There's some done down by the upper river, it comes out of the Tringatora stream at home, but that also includes a neighbour, so you don't know who's effect of what on that. And I know they're pretty good, because there's still plenty of freshwater crayfish in our stream at home. And to be honest, I think it's improved in recent years.
But apart from that, Mr. Chairman, I'm very happy with the comments made, and I think it's been very clear, so thank you.
So you're happy with the clarity of the comments made, because we haven't made our mind up on anything.
No, we haven't, yes.
Key point of distinction.
Yes, good afternoon, Mr. Drummond. You're familiar with the term critical source area?
Yeah.
And so in terms of your presentation, when you were talking about various methodologies, I think that could be employed.
Yeah, I think I'd like to. You know, there's some places, that paddock I showed you where they're coming down the hill with those small gullies, to me that would be a spot where you had a small dam in the bottom. I don't want to tell you big enough it's going to trap hundreds of ducks too reasonable away from my duck pond, but I think that's going to create a bigger problem. So, you know, if you had a small pond there with silt, then that may be better than, you know, only other alternative is, if we're allowed to, it would be logical that you try and drain flow that gully, but to me that's probably not the best solution for that stream coming down the hill. So just having that practicality to actually work out in the individual situations what's the best approach is key.
Thank you.
Okay.
Morris, any clarification?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. You were involved in that nitrogen trial in the Five Rivers area, I understand.
That was on the home property. We bought the Five Rivers property 6 years ago, so it was on the one at Avondale that trial was done.
Okay, so are you familiar with the losses of nitrogen from free-draining soils, particularly under winter grazing situation?
Yeah, and the other thing that came out of that trial is tussock country soils, for some of it did actually go on tussock country because they're high carbon and didn't have near the leaching of what paddock soils do.
So on the free-draining soils though, what kinds of mitigation do you think are appropriate there to reduce losses of nitrogen?
Generally, there's not a lot goes on to tussock country, and what we come across is you'd either need to use low rates. We had one of the trials had a 50 mil rain event that wasn't forecast after some reasonably high rates of nitrogen on. I can't remember the exact rates in the past, but it only went on to a small area, so it did affect very small streams that wouldn't flow in the summer. By the time I got to the mainstream, it had no effect, but if you had it done a big area at once, then that would have caused a problem. So that's the other areas. If you're flying nitrogen onto that sort of country, is either keep the rates over the whole lot low, or if you're going up a bit higher, then don't do it all at once, so you reduce that risk and you're not going to, you know, harm the water life in the creek further down or get your levels up.
The other thing I wanted to ask you about was streams and their propensity to erode in relation to whether or not they have stock grazing on them or not. And we hear a lot about this, but when we ask our land sustainability staff and when we talk to scientists who actually study these things closely, they find that there isn't a lot of evidence to support that, and it's related to a whole range of factors such as the soil type and obviously the flow regime and stream and that sort of thing. Can you elaborate on that further?
Yeah, I personally think, but this is only from my experiences, the small creeks we've got in some of our beef units that are fenced off, to be honest, some of them are probably more, I'd call them ditches, they were dug by excavators, you know what I mean, and they're fenced off. There's not near the same erosion there. The main streams down through the middle got a lot bigger water flow, and a lot faster water flow is where I think that we could actually create a lot bigger problem in particular than what we will in some of those small flat ones. So I think it's the flow of the water, the speed of the water that's causing the problem, yeah. And then it's ripping into the banks because you've got the grass is nowhere near as dense, and it catches, when you've got long grass, the water catches that grass and pulls it out and pulls the dirt with it and just takes the bank. Well, that area I showed you, it'd be at least three or four times, probably more, worse below where it's fenced off than it is above the damage to the banks. And, you know, of course we've got other things like E. coli and that we've got to think about, so the trade-offs might be still worth doing in some situations. That's why I say intensive beef, I think it's probably is still worth the trade-off, but I think we've got to be careful we're not trying to spend a lot of money fixing one problem and actually creating another that could be as bad or worse.
Thank you. Okay.
Thank you, and no further questions from me, but thank you very much.
Thank you.